Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the USCDI Task Force meeting on April 11th. We will call the meeting to order, starting with a roll call. Christina Caraballo?
Here.
Mary O'Malley?
Here.
Stephen Lane? Not yet. Glenn McDonald?
Here.
Brett Oliver? Not yet. Ken Kawamoto? I believe I tell Ken on the Adobe. We'll circle back. Valerie Gray. Laura Heerman Langford.
Here.
Leslie Kelly Hall.
Good afternoon.
Nancy Beaven.
Yes, I'm here.
Great. Kim Nolan.
Hi, I'm here.
Great. Rich Elmore. Yes, Eric Heflin, Dan Freeman, Mike Peretta,
here,
and Rob Havasay,
here.
Great. Okay, Christina and Terry, I turn it over to you.
Great. Thanks, Lauren. Am I sharing my screen already? So thanks, everyone, for joining. We are in the home stretch, and thank you so much for the amount of work that's gone into everybody's recommendations so far and the comments over the weekend. This is our last meeting before our final recommendations are due, which will be on Friday. So we're going to do things a little differently today. I'm going to share my screen, and we're actually going to go through the Google document live. We do want to direct the task force attention to a couple things. So just so everybody's aware, things that we want to discuss today are the definitions that we added at the beginning of the recommendations. We want to hone in on the overview. We did a big revamp after seeing task force comments on the overview. We want to discuss the inclusion of the term data class work group, and we want to note that we have replaced all of the references to data elements with data items and data classes. We also, at the end, want to go over our recommendations related to issues and our issues raised but not addressed, and in total, there are 9 of them. So as we go through this document, just keep in mind that we have 9 additional recommendations that we also want to make sure that we've reviewed with the task force to see that, ensure that we want them in there. So Terry, did you have anything else to add to that?
No, I think that's a great list.
And okay, great.
Just sort of a word of caution. Let's not worry about wordsmithing, you know, unless something is so unclear that it needs to be changed. We'll try to do good editing. But what we really need your thoughts on are whether the concepts expressed really match your thoughts about this whole process. All right, so tell us what you think. And if you don't like it, especially tell us that. Let's go.
Sounds good. So I can't exactly see what you guys are seeing. I just think it probably just has my full screen on. So right now I have it on the definition section that was added right at the beginning. Can everybody see that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Perfect. So was everybody able to read through this, our new draft, and then also go over the definitions yet? I can definitely give people some time to read.
Christina, this is Kim.
Yep. Hey, Kim.
I just had a quick question because I think I keep confusing myself on this. The data item, in my mind from last week, I was thinking it was kind of an attribute of the data class, but this definition is a little bit different. It says it's about a patient versus the data class. So I just want to make sure I'm clear on that and that this is correct.
Yeah, Christina, I can take that. I think this was thanks to some, hopefully, some comments from Clem that I've managed to adequately reflect. But it's to think of a data item as sort of a child of a data class.
Okay.
Data class is the parent. So the data items fall under the data class. So it's meant to represent that sort of hierarchy of, almost hierarchy of scale.
I'll help out. So the distinction was between just, it's not just a field, it's usually some kind of a structure, and it's usually something that is used to talk about an instance of a particular person or patient, rather than, say, just a single standalone code.
So a data item would not be a child to a condition or a drug. It's always about the patient.
This is meant to send data about patients, I think, around. So that's how I thought of it. It's not just vocabulary standalone. It's really an object. And there's many instances of that object, say like PHQ-9. There's 9 critters in that panel or in that set. A drug would be a prescription, which has a lot of, would be a structure with the patient, the date, the time, blah, blah, stuff. It wouldn't be just list of drugs. I say that wrong. It wouldn't be just a drug table, you know, like a master table of drugs. Now, I may be wrong, but I thought that's what we're trying to send around with stuff about, you know, it was patient information or of various kinds, and it belonged to different classes. I mean, holler back. That's how I thought was what we were talking about.
Yeah, so Clem, like if you take a medication, you have like the ingredient, the strength, the dose, the frequency, the route of administration. Is that that's not a data item by this definition, correct?
That's sort of the object. That's sort of the table. That's the field from the table, but an instance of an item in that table is what we're sending around. And then we want all items that are talking about drugs with those kinds of attributes. I mean, that is, so drugs doesn't work as, you can't find as many classes for drug information, but I'm trying to distinguish between information in the abstract about a drug. These are drug interactions, or this is the list of the names of all drugs, rather something about drugs related to people and data for those people being sent in this class.
So would like an active or an inactive status of a medication?
That's an attribute of the object, you know, the prescription record or the whatever, you know. Scripts has a bunch. I mean, there's dispensing, and there's more than one class related to drugs. Dispense, prescribe, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I thought of the data class as being like a data object or a table with specific items in it that then talked about something about an individual patient.
So I think we have maybe a couple others who may want to chime in on this. Mike and Laura, are you wanting to clarify the definition here?
This is Mike. Yeah, I just thought that if we're inferring here a hierarchy, it might be helpful also to include some or explicitly call that out, data items roll up as data classes, et cetera, et cetera. I would love to volunteer my time as well if we're interested in creating some sort of graphic to represent that as well.
And this is Laura. I can add on that. I would appreciate some sort of a graphic if that's possible. I think that would be helpful. And then also because we've been talking that data item is part of a data class, then just as we say data class work group, I would call it data class item.
Well, the way we're talking about item is it's a single instance, and you're usually talking about more than one kind. You know, like if you're doing disability class, you might have 10 or 15, 20 or 100 or maybe 1,000 specific things you'd say about a patient regarding disability.
Right, and remember the data item is really that stage one where it's identified. The data class work group is to get us to the data classes in the stages that follow. So we just had that data item in there for stage one to really get that bucket of all data items that people could possibly want. But then the work group forms the actual data class.
But then there are specific pieces that are in a data class that we were saying were items. And so maybe if you're saying a data item is something coming in kind of preformed and it hasn't been, then that maybe needs a completely different name. But if it's a child of a data class, then perhaps calling it data class item would more imply that it's a child.
Yes.
So then is the recommendation to change data item to data class item?
If it's the child of a data class. But if you're meaning the data item is something that comes in an early stage and it may not be known yet, is it a data item, a data class or something, then it should have a different name because it's not completely formed or understood. If it's supposed to be kind of this premorphous unknown, what is it? Then I wouldn't call it a data item. I think we could come up with a different name. I'm just not being very creative myself at the moment.
I guess if I may interject, would you all agree that if, for example, prescriptions were a data class, then dosage might be a data item?
I would think of that as an attribute of the record. The item would be, penicillin prescription. But I'd better to get off into something that are observations because they fit. Items are what you call survey instruments, the things inside of them.
So should we have a data class attribute?
The attribute is the dose or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think we also might want to, as much as possible, avoid really sort of the HL7 techie language about classes of items and attributes. And I mean, the point, I think the simple, my simple-minded construct is that a data class includes a bunch of observations that you're going to want to make about a patient, all of which have potentially subheadings. And that data class is what you're trying to figure out the boundaries of. So you want to know sort of what observations do you want to include in the data class. So perhaps we want to say it's a data observation instead of a data item. Would that clarify things for people?
Well, what I just heard you say is in data class, maybe we should add that this includes observations around the data class. And you could give an example with a medication like the dose, the route of administration, the ingredient. I don't know.
I think you're right on it, but the challenge is the word observation, at least in the message world, is different from a prescription. It's a different object in the message context. So, I think we're talking about the columns are the attributes, if you think about it as just a table. The rows, if they're just, the set of rows you might talk about for a given person, those would be what we were calling the items. Because clearly, if you do a survey instrument, you call each of the questions an item, and that's where I think that word came from. But you send all those answers to all those questions as a package, as a data class. then you might have a bunch of stuff that are sent sometimes and not sent sometimes to be part of the data class. But I've said too much.
Well,
I can the queue with comment.
Sorry, you meant me, Mike? Sorry, I didn't hear the name. Okay, cool.
Yes.
I think it would really great if we just had a simple hierarchy just drawn out data classes all the way down to the most specific level. I don't think it has to it really doesn't have to be terribly complicated, but I definitely think like we can make this very simple graphic and just clear this up right away. But please reach out to me and engage me with that. I'd be happy to help out and volunteer my time to do that.
Okay. Let me encourage us to agree with that approach and move on. So we'll seek clarification around data class and item and what we're going to call it and how we're going to describe it. So moved.
So, Mike, if you could actually send that to Stacy and Adam with a pretty quick turnaround, that would be great.
Absolutely.
Thank you. So then just scrolling down, are we ready to scroll down? I know we can only see so much of my screen without it being too small. Happy to go back up. Take a look at the USCDI process and structure as well. And are there any comments?
So what number is that? Is that 2.2.11 or is that above that?
Yeah, we're right at the beginning. So right after the charge where you have the definitions.
Okay.
This was moved up from the original.
.1.2 and then there's a set of bullets.
The only thing I might add in here, this is Kim, as I was going through it, I felt like the word standards-based was sort of used loosely, and sometimes it was like a transport standard, sometimes it was a semantic standard, and it confused me a little as I was reading through it what the intention of that standards-based was, so I think it might be good to put a definition around that up here, too.
Good idea. Yeah.
A definition of standards-based referring both to semantic and transport standards?
Well, maybe let's distinguish them.
Or separately, okay.
And yeah,
then, and
I think
the
you would want to kind of read through because there were a couple of places where I got a little confused where I thought maybe it was only like a transport standard that could be needed at that point in time versus the actual semantic standard. So, and I marked a couple of places in there. So as we go through, I can kind of point out some of the points where I was confused, but it may just be me.
But
no.
Even there, we need some clarification because transport can be down low level, and then semantics can include codes and the structure. So maybe an example would help,
yeah.
Even if we have to mention a real standard.
Okay, that's a good point, and thanks, Clem. Good point, Kim, because you're right. They are kind of mashed together.
Okay, so, and everybody, I'm just in the Google Doc if anybody wants to be able to not just be dependent on where my screen is. I'm trying to think of a good way to kind of go over the next thing that we wanted to go over, which was the overview. Basically, what we've done here is looked at identify the top things that prevent data from being shared all the way from the top where it doesn't exist to it exists but not collected at all or in part. It's collected, but there are no standards for regulatorizing it. It's collected and there are appropriate standards, but they're not necessarily being applied. It is collected and standards are mostly applied within the organization, but they are not being applied to data shared outside of the organization. And then the sixth is detailed and reliable workflows to share the data outside the organization have not been established. And then after that, we've kind of gone through each of them, of these challenges and identified why it matters and what we're trying to do to address this in the US CDI as best we can. It's a very high level overview.
So Kim is up.
Thank you.
Yeah,
and this kind of goes with some of the standard stuff that I was talking about. Like it says it is collected, but there are no standards. It is number four, it is collected, and there are appropriate standards, but they are not being applied. But at least in some of the core data elements that was in the proposal, there were the transport standards, but it was a text or blob. So you could exchange it, and it could be human-readable but not computable. So is that captured here also in that scenario? Because I didn't feel like it was, but maybe I'm not reading them.
No, I don't think it was. I think you're right.
No.
But that gets back to a long discussion that my assertion would be that if it's complete blob, there's no structure anywhere, it can't be done anything with it. So I think, are you really meaning stuff that has a payload that's text, but you still have who the patient is in a structure, and you have some other kind of header information? Yes?
Yeah.
Which kind of you mean? Okay.
Yeah, well, I mean that it has the attributes with the patient and everything with it, so you can do something. Like the history of physical illness, like if somebody wanted to send that.
Yeah, that should fit. Yeah, that's,
okay.
That belongs. But I actually had this suggested some discussion about that, but I don't know whether in one of my comments, written comments, that we should make a distinction about what we're talking about unstructured so that we can agree on it.
Yeah, that's a good point, Clem. I think that's going to come up a little while later. And,
okay.
And
all right.
Essentially, I think what we adopted, or the authors adopted, your term of minimally structured data to recognize that you need structure to identify who the patient is, who the recipient is, and what the content is.
Yeah.
Minimally.
Then I don't think there's any disagreement with that being a perfectly valid stuff. I mean, that's what's being sent around all the time for x-rays, you know.
Right. Okay. I was thinking that maybe we start this section, so there are six items, you know, six ways that data doesn't move. Anyone got a seven or care to kick something off?
Well, I think there's some that maybe you don't need because we say, do coding systems exist to remember these items? Never mind. No, it's all right.
Laura,
so this is Laura.
Like
just
got to
jump in. I don't know if it's five that I don't understand or if I might have a seventh. So it is collected and standards are mostly applied within but are not being applied to data shared outside. That doesn't entirely make sense to me. It kind of does, but doesn't entirely. And what I'm thinking of, that I don't know if it's five rewritten or a new item, is so data standards are applied, but they're applied inconsistently. And so one institution applies that standard with one definition of a code and another institution applies it with a different coding, then they're not interoperable. So the standard is applied, but not applied consistently.
Well, I think you're right. I don't think we need that one because if it's really applied well inside, there's no reason they wouldn't be sending it outside.
If you have it inside, you would use the same thing outside. But then my issue is that if I have it inside, but I have it differently at two different institutions, then when I send it outside, I'm not interoperable.
Well, then they're not really standardized in the first place, probably.
Well, no, you can have apply a standard differently.
You might have different rules
that are trusted inside, and so you accept a direct message with a consolidated CDA payload, and you ingest it automatically. But now when you're going to send that using those same standards externally with someone you don't know, you might have a very different process for sending and a process receiving,
mm-hmm.
and different levels of automation.
You can appropriately apply the FHIR standard, but there's interpretations within the FHIR standard of, you know, selecting a LOINT code that are completely acceptable. But if I choose different ones, then I won't be interoperable. I've applied the standard, and I applied it along all the rules, but I applied it differently. That's what I'm getting at. And like I said, I think it's 5 maybe rewritten, because I'm not sure 5 really exists. I don't know that I understand 5.
I think that's a good point, Laura. I think you bring up 2 different things that where it's applied within the organization, but not necessarily,
maybe not
universal standards.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I mean,
thank you.
The reality is, in most places, they might have a standard HL7 message, but they use their own local codes. That's the biggest problem. And so that sure wouldn't count as standardized.
Well, but even if they used a LOINT code, I mean, you use the example of heart rate or blood pressure. There's so many different heart rates in LOINT that are acceptable. They're fine. And it could both be applicable to you know, just the way that institution uses it for an adult cardiac care patient. But they choose 2 different codes.
I'd be happy to get messages with codes in them instead of local codes. You can do your own.
That's true.
We built 1,500 messages, and our only death problem, Death Star, was trying to map all 3,000 lab codes. I mean, otherwise, it was a day or so. We could tweak them.
So let me go back to item 5. So, Christina, you've got the take out mostly to say the standards are applied. Because the issue that they're applied, but they're just not necessarily shared among other entities.
I'll clean this up. I was just trying to capture it.
Yeah. And Laura, does that take care of 5 and 7, or do you have a 7?
I think that takes care of 5, and that is the one I was saying, is the inconsistencies of implementation of the standards. It's still a valid standard or a valid use of the standard. They're just inconsistent. And so I think that takes care of it there in 5.
Great.
Okay.
I guess the 7th or a subpart of 5 would be what Clem was saying, in that so there's standard codes and there's local codes. And so, again, you can essentially implement a standard using, you know, and be within the rules of the standard. But if you use your local codes, that's even more broken than using an inconsistent code of the standard codes. Does that just confuse everybody?
No. That's a common case.
Yeah, I mean, the local code use could still be considered implementing the standard, but then your interoperability is broken.
Yeah.
An inconsistent use of national codes also creates lack of interoperability. And so there are kind of an A and a B to 5.
Okay. Yeah, but interoperability is not a unique – there is no perfect one definition. So we were sort of stuck with a little bit of gray zone. In reality. tweak things a little bit differently. So I wouldn't make that. That would be a world so much better than the world we have now, where you could actually get the data and use it. So if you've got a blood pressure sitting and a blood pressure standing, they're different codes. They actually mean different things, but that's separate. So you'd get them both, and you could store them in a proper place, and you could actually decide whether you wanted to do further manipulation.
But only if they're not a local code. So
it's a lot easier to do if you do that with a standard code base as opposed to sending your local code base.
Yeah. So how are we going to get people to make that change?
Government.
Government.
I'm gonna say, well, we have ideas, but do we really want to cover the how now?
No. But I think it's something that needs, we ought to be thinking about the how when we're talking about the what.
How, I mean, I have to plug some of my own work then right now, is it's kind of what HSPC is all about, is getting professional organizations and clinicians together to say, let's agree on some codes here. Let's agree on a common instantiation of the standard to improve our interoperability.
Yeah.
Yay.
How is in place, but I'm trying not to plug things that I'm too involved in.
Go ahead.
Right,
go
and
ahead.
I think that how is a perfect example of what would be picked up and taken through the U.S. CDI process that was ready for primetime regulatory consideration.
But we mm-hmm. should remember that Medicare standardized everything in an instant without getting full agreement before, and actually the e-prescribing pretty much happened that way too.
And as we describe these in more detail and why it was important for the US CDI, maybe we can add something to this and why we thought it was important at the very beginning of the process for the data item harmonization, which comes up later in our recommendations. So maybe we take some of this content and put it into the document down here. Sorry, and it's hard, I'm not sure the best, most efficient way to share my Google Doc here. Thoughts?
Where are you in the document now? What number?
I think you guys are just looking at the overview with 1 through 6. I can scroll down. Feel free to direct me.
But I guess I lost context of what your question was to help answer when you an overview of what were you referring to?
So if you read this overview, so it's got the recommendations, the overview. We've identified these 6 areas, and then underneath there is a synopsis of why each of these different areas matters and what we're trying to do within the US CDI to improve upon it. So to break down some of these barriers.
Okay, and then your question was related to what, do we need that section? And I think we do. I really lost context on what your question was.
So we're building out and putting on these bullets at the top. We're saying we may need sub-bullets. So what is the most important high-level bullet for the overview, and then where do we need to expand within that actual bullet versus within our written overview below?
Well, just to clarify, example. There are no bullets in this section. You mean the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5?
Numbers.
And then secondly, I didn't hear anybody I didn't hear anybody pushing that, but maybe I misheard.
I think what I'm understanding, and I'm sorry to just break in without raising my hand, is that the wording for the numbers is short and succinct. 5 gets a little bit longer. And I think what you're asking is, do we need to put more description in the 1 through 6 when we do have more description in paragraphs below. Is that what you're kind of asking?
Yes.
Like, do I need to put sub-bullets?
Perfect.
Yeah.
No, and I don't think, I don't, just with five, because we were saying there needs to be sub-bullets. So where can we, what's the most important thing to put in this bullet? And then where, is there other stuff that we want to call out in our overview below?
What I heard is five needs to be mutated, not added to.
Well, definitely mutated. Yeah. We're going to clean up what was just added here.
Well, if you're saying the standards being both codes and structure are applied internally, it isn't a big deal inside or outside. It's just choices being made. That's, I think, and then there was a secondary, so it needs clarification, I guess.
Yeah, I would clean up bullet or number five, but I don't think that there will need to be any other sub-bullets, but it will need to have a clarification or, you know, a descriptive kind of paragraph as the others do down below.
Well, that, and actually, do you want to take a shot at changing it? Five?
Yeah, I'm happy to help. I mean, you know, I don't want to, I'm not very good. If I could have a few minutes tonight or in the morning, I can... you know, look at that. I'm happy to, as Mike volunteered some time on a diagram, I'm happy to help on what five
I think
in the short
needs,
timeline.
Yeah, mostly needs what you said.
Mm-hmm. So sign Laura up for number five in the descriptive paragraph. And I know we have a tight deadline.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Laura. I think the next big section that we really want, and appreciate the feedback on, is the whole concept around the data class work group, which really forms the heart of the next stage that we envision, the preparation stage.
So identify it by number?
I'm sorry. 2.2.1.2. There we go. 2.2.2.1.1. Next one is.
There it goes.
Preparation. So basically, the process, and it might just, let me get take a minute to sort of walk through quickly the process that seems to have emerged, but. We haven't really discussed it and want to get some consensus, obviously. So if we think about the stages of the stage one being everyone throw what they think is valuable into a pot and we'll see what we can pull out of it that's worth moving forward, to then be cleaned up and out of which comes a data class. So the group that's responsible for the cleanup, meaning tight definitions, finding the appropriate standards, harmonizing the data items with other work groups, harmonizing them across as many of the stakeholders as they possibly can, and create a data class that's then sufficiently clear and well-defined that it can be pilot tested. So that's the job of stage two. And to do that, we thought we really needed a very formal structure because it's a lot of work and it's work that's not going to happen without a clear charge, direction, and support. So let me just stop.
It's pretty good as it stands.
Right. I mean, does anyone think that this stuff is going to get done without, without some direction? Mm-hmm.
Well, sorry, this is Laura again. I'm not raising my hand well, but are you getting it funding? Are you getting it because this is a bit of work, and I'm not sure it's even just direction. Is it in order to accomplish this, it has to be funded so that it gets the time and attention it needs?
Well, not so much getting into funding as it is getting into the concept of support of the process. kind of like the way ONC supports ISA or the proving ground, or, you know, it needs to support a process. And the process that came to my mind was the S&I framework.
So, Terry, I assumed they were going to do that same level of sort of help support. No?
Well, I hope so. I think we should, I mean.
Well, it may need to be called out as a suggestion is what you're saying, Terry.
Yeah.
We see this as important as that. Yeah.
Yes.
That I can agree with, yes.
Otherwise,
and so you don't.
It's a condition of going forward is that there has to be an oversight and governance structure provided. And so, therefore, funded. So it's not just a recommendation; it's a condition of the USCDI existing.
I mean, I would say it a little differently. Yes, but I think there is they could imitate. They won't have to create a new one. They could imitate the S&I framework, and that may make it easier to see what's needed. Otherwise, it sounds like we've got to create a governance and start all over with the processes.
I mean, we could call out the S&I as an example, but it sounds like if I can call a vote, everyone is in agreement that this needs to be supported or the process doesn't move forward.
Agreed.
Do we raise our hand?
Yes, for
yeah,
sure.
No, that's right. Just say no. If
agreed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everybody.
Yeah. Good work, guys. All
okay.
Right.
So does that move us along to our related or our additional recommendations? Or before we do that, is there any other area that we didn't call out for discussion today that any task force, Clem, I see your hand up.
Oh, no, I was just voting yes. I didn't.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, I guess maybe Christina, just to, although we've never really asked, it's just been assumed, the six stages, you know, so we blew up the draft from three to six stages. Anyone have, I know it's kind of late, but anyone with a strong allergic reaction to the six stages and think they're, you know.
Well, I've been consistent. I always thought it's too many.
Yeah, right. Yep, okay.
I'll try to stay consistent.
Yeah, this is Laura. I mean, they make sense to me, but I kind of agree with Clem at times. Is it complicated? I mean, and is it doable? I share his concerns on if this is actually going to be implementable at the scale that we're asking it to be done. So I have concerns about that. It makes sense to me if I know that actually essentially have the support, Terry, that you're saying it's going to need. I mean, the entire process is going to require some support.
If it's too heavy, it might not get enough support. So.
Right. And then I share Clem's concerns that he's voiced all along about the entry and the exit criteria may be too high of a bar. I feel like a test and a pilot of it. I mean, I always joke within my own head that I'd really like to put the existing items that are already part of it and say, well, how do they fall into this?
I think if we did the exercise of taking some of the existing items, or certainly the ones that have been proposed, I think we'd find that some of them are already, you know, knocking on the USCDI door and are already there. And and some are going to be stuck back in early in stage two because they're great ideas, but there are no standards. There's no semantic standards that corral them.
So there is this idea of piloting this to see how does this work. I mean, I get it and it makes sense to me, but is it doable? I'm not sure.
Okay.
And so could there be a trial phase before it was mandated?
Well, that was what stage three was all about. It was sort of the trial.
No, not about the trial stage of the data elements. I'm talking about the whole process.
Oh, I see. Take the process out for a trial run. Ah, okay.
Right. Before we come out and say all of US and A.
Great idea.
And here is the USCDI, and this is now how you must work with it, and blah, blah, blah. I think we need to trial it.
That's a great idea.
The other problem with pilots is that who would buy a phone if there are just 20 of you owned one? You know, it's a real challenge to do when you have to have both ends working to really find out what it does.
Yeah.
That's great. Kim, did you have something to add to this as well? You've been waiting a minute.
Mine was a different comment on another section, so
okay.
I'll wait until we're done here.
Perfect.
So let's add a section, and that almost comes under governance, I guess not quite, but a section that here's the proposal, but our proposal is trial this process in pilot. And I think that's a great idea.
And in that, we can also put in some of the concerns that were just raised.
Yeah, and that's why we need to be doing the trial, because, I mean,
exactly.
We see the value, we see the need. We think this could work, but we're concerned about these areas and would suggest a trial.
Yeah.
Could we allow sort of some higher power to sort of do the final shaping, like Ankh? I mean, they're going to have to figure out how to fit it in the resources and the... Somehow we can't architect the whole thing out with the little bit of time we spend.
And they'll also have a public comment period on this too, so there'll be responses to that.
Yeah, I think we're sketching out the process. There'll be a lot of feedback on it. We're not getting the bill.
Good.
Which is a good thing, probably. Okay. All right, so moved. Six stages with caveats and the need to test. Okay. All right, Christina, I think we're at our out of charge recommendations, or related,
right.
but not specifically to the charge.
Yeah, and on this we have let me go down. Sorry. So one thing I want us to think about as we go through this is, can we merge these two? We have recommendations on related issues, which has six recommendations, and then we have issues raised but not addressed, which is three. And I'm wondering if we can just put them all as additional recommendations or things to think about. So as we go through them, I'm going to ask that again at the end of this.
Could you again specify the paragraph number?
Yep. We are on 2.3, recommendations on related issues.
Thank you.
But Kim's got our Kim, are you?
Oh, yep.
Oh,
we
yeah.
forgot you. We
That's
forgot
okay.
about you.
Oh, sorry, Kim.
I had one, it was closer to the beginning under number two, recommendations, which I believe is on page four, Christina. I just wanted to make sure something was correct in the paragraph. It's at the
Am
top.
Am I going up further? Further? Up?
Yeah. Wait, go down.
So, okay. These are the recommendations with the overview, and then summary of recommendations.
No, wait, it's in between. It's right up above that.
It's in the word part of the overview.
Right here.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Okay. The paragraph that says there is a substantial body of data, that one, if you go to the very end of that paragraph, examples of data that is currently collected but without necessary standards include nursing quality measure, some federally mandated assessment instruments, and billing data. Like billing data, we have X12, so I didn't want to ruffle anybody's feathers if they read that. Is X12?
So these were examples. So if we question it, you want to just delete it?
Yeah, delete it. And
okay.
Or use the word some billing data if it's true for some. But I agree, you wouldn't want to do too much of umbrella there.
Very standardized. We'd be delighted to have things standardized in clinical as well as in billing.
But remember, we're saying whether is that standard ready for prime time regulatory action. And so an X12 standard and billing data could be.
It is.
It's more than that. It's mandated by law. So
but not for particular ECQM uses, not for research uses.
Okay.
There's other not necessarily ready yet for an open API for patients. You know, there's other use cases, and X12 is great information.
So do we have another replacement example that we want to put in that is a better example?
I would just put some billing
data.
This is the first paragraph on page 3.
I lost the actual reference.
Second.
It's the second paragraph.
Yeah.
Let me look at my hard copy.
Yeah.
But there's no example in paragraph 2 on the first top of page 3.
Paragraph 1 on page 3, the top first paragraph. When it starts, there's a substantial body of data. Maybe I got different pages.
Okay, well, I take the federal mandated assessment instruments as well. Those are, I can send you the specs. They got to be followed. They won't get paid. OASIS and all the rest of those?
They're tightly specified, but they're just recently getting some LOINC codes attached to them. And being mapped to HL7. So there I mean, you'd think they would have been done a long time ago, but this is literally within the last couple of months.
Well, I like your position for sure, but they really are standardized. I mean, the Medicare does it with their own way, so it's a slightly different thread, but I like what you said.
So that gets back to Kim's comment on what do you mean by standards. Right. CMS has tightly specified what goes where, but they're not.
That's not necessary for all the use cases envisioned.
Yeah, good point.
So what happens is let's say we have a great standard that's already been adopted, that's widely spread, and now there's a new use case. And that use case says, boy, we need to pick that bucket up again and assign it now for this new use case and this new regulation. So we're not saying the standards today that are already in place and already have regs shouldn't be excluded. It's just they would be on the fast track for a different use case.
Well, I worry that this could be really confusing to the industry as it's stated now. Ideas are all good, but I just...
I'm having a hard time keeping track of where you are. You said you're at 2.2.1.1?
No, we're above 2.1. The first paragraph on page 3. Last sentence.
We're under the overview.
Okay. 2.2.
Got it.
Page 3-4.
All right.
I mean,
when you are looking for comments and other things, let me know.
Maybe we should come out and say that the high formality, but not part of the SDO process, Medicare standards should be embedded in the SDO processes. They're working toward it. They're working toward it. That might be what we really are saying about the billing things here.
Yes. Well, I would certainly go with that recommendation.
Call them ad hoc standards, but they're locked down.
Yeah. They're tight standards. They're just not accessible to anyone else or for any other use cases, Laura says.
you know, CMS is just, I don't know if you guys all know it, they've announced this thing where they're going to let people into their chronic disease database using FHIR, especially, I mean, patients, their own data they could pull. So they're moving.
So can we move on to the additional recommendations just to keep us going? We've got 30 minutes left. Does anybody have anything else? And group, if you guys have comments, please feel free to put them into this document in real time. That's completely fine.
So you're on page 11 at the bottom?
I'm going there. Yep. I don't know which page it is, but.
Page 11 on my printout. But.
I think we're going 2.3.
Here we are. Wait, no, we're there we go. So first of our additional recommendations is to explicitly address barriers to interoperability. Give everybody a second to just go over this.
Well, I don't understand the first bullet. So if everybody doesn't like it, we shouldn't do it? Is that what it says?
Yeah, I think the flip side of that is that there are some stakeholders who don't have data classes that meet their use cases. It's not that.
Okay, we should say it that way then.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, it's not a general barrier to interoperability, but if for those for some stakeholders haven't got a stake.
Got it, right.
And I think bullet two is either a truism or just a dilatory statement. It's not going to get us anywhere just to saying it's hard.
Yeah, and I think the point of that one is that it's not only hard, it may be impossible for some organizations to get very far along with interoperability, even though they have information of high value to the rest of the system. And with the implication being that if you want them to get over that barrier, you may have to invest in their capabilities.
So why don't we say that? You know, some of the off the main, yeah. Well, it's really the smaller, less rich organizations, right? I mean,
yeah.
Valuable, you know, the community organizations are struggling, you know, the safety net hospitals may be in the same situations that need
the patients themselves.
Well, that, wait till you see what's coming from Medicare. I today saw three people with iPhones looking at all the records from two different hospitals with Apple Health. It was so easy as pie. Some stuff's
blue
coming.
Blue button on fire. Okay.
Are we trying to say, this is Rob, are we trying to say complex interoperability schemes are a barrier to market entry or participation?
Well, I think what they're saying here is there are some places that don't have the resources to get on board and need them. That's the second bullet. But this could get a lot simpler.
So I'd like to add to what Clem says about resources. I think it has also to do not even with the technical aspects, but with the workflow. I think that we're not used to, in our practice of medicine, incorporating data from other places. In some ways it's been implemented, it is not easy to fit it into a workflow, but in fact it burdens the clinical workflow. And so that kind of immersion, I mean, I'm thinking like allergies and not having a separate allergy list that you have to consult, but that they're actually integrated, or the problem list. there's something in here related to interoperability and current workflow, and then also just the cost of getting through. How do we create the technical solution to fit the clinical workflow? Because I think that's been one of our barriers.
And would
not
that
well articulated.
Fit into Laura? Would that fit into this last bullet or not?
Now you're on page 12 now.
Are you thinking the link interoperability to a compelling business case?
Yeah, for each stakeholder. So it's just that's kind of a broad way to say address each stakeholder's concern. Like I would.
This is a network economy, and single stakeholders will never make a network economy work. So the fact.
Oh, that I know. You know, telephones haven't worked because they're assigned to individuals. Of course it'll work.
No, I'm not individuals, but everybody's got one. That's why they work.
Right, right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think picking out the fact that one stakeholder is having a problem that isn't going to help anything unless we can identify that problem and target it. So the one, if there's
so
no resources, we should say, let's get them resources.
So, or get them proportionate share in governance and structure, or a named sponsor from government. So who represents the patients? For instance, there's not someone who's going to sponsor them to go to standards meetings. So that's one stakeholder that always needs to have government assigned and processes deliberate that will include them.
Well, I think we should propose that kind of some kind of mechanism that's directive to the problem, like that.
I had put some in my comments. I'll send them again.
But I mean, I never saw such a buzz with this Apple Health Day. They're all walking around with their iPhones. No work at all. It just shows up. Boom. So there will be some.
That's the whole of the conversation, Clem.
Well, but it's...
It is.
It's happening.
Yeah, it is. Totally. I just yesterday spent a lot of time about that.
That's a great point. That's another industry that might not be participating as a named sponsor or the typical folks attending. But now we have Apple. So they aren't following the same things. They are introducing a new standard. It's the iPhone standards.
They are
using their iPhone and their iKit. They're using Fire, but you have to be running it on an iPhone. That's a different standard.
They put it in their
standard.
Apple Kit. Yeah, it's within
iOS.
So that they put that.
Correct. So would, for instance, Apple and Android Play be able to participate in the USCDI for standards?
That would
be
great.
That they want to see.
Yeah,
wouldn't it?
No,
wouldn't it? So we want to make sure our process accommodates both those coming to the industry and those inside the industry.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So the point that I'm still trying to get to, though, when I talk about the clinical workflow, so, I mean, I think we're meeting with the USCDI and trying to do more, you know, structured data interoperability that it will be the data will end up in the right place. But there's also, I believe it's a practice issue almost, because there's the trust and the value of this data coming from somewhere else and the utility of it. And if you want to bring in the patient thing, the trust and the value that the heart rates that the patient submits from their home spreadsheet or their Apple Watch, how does that fit into the decision-making of a physician? I mean, it's a completely different thing that
In the past,
the way we've done interoperability is you have to go somewhere. It's like, oh, I'm in the ER. I want something from another thing. I have to click three other ways to go get the CDA document, and then I can have my interoperability and read through pages.
As you add more stakeholders, you're going to move from reconciliation to curation, because there's never going to be as many people who can be now on a care team as the patient defines, a way that says we all have a standardized workflow or a standardized trust. And just because a patient has a conflicting information doesn't mean it isn't true. It just means it's true to them. And I would quote Carrie, patients will always be adherent to a plan they create. And so it's the same kind of thing. This is true to me. And so perhaps the conflict in information is the most useful discussion to have.
Well, getting back to the physician getting stuff unsolicited, there's a deep problem because they can't spend the time to read it all. It's a deep, deep problem, and they're really worried about it and getting sued for something they haven't totally digested, and it's just flying in every moment, and they have to go home and sleep sometime.
Yeah, I think there's workflow to be addressed there, but Kaiser would say 51% of their interactions are now digital with a patient. So there's always a competence and an appreciation and an embracing that has to take place with any technology. The same thing would apply to a phone. So I think our job is to make sure that whether the stakeholder is the patient or the stakeholder is industry, that there's consideration that can be given. And the diligence that determines whether the use case is applicable is not part of the USCDI. The USCDI says a group is coming with a use case that's ready for prime time and follow these six steps.
This is Rob again. I think we addressed a little bit of the trust issue, and I've been flipping through pages here to try and find it. I think stage three emerging, or somewhere where we talk about moving forward with data that is not yet fully structured. A lot of patient-generated data falls into that category right now. And as long as we, and again, I'm trying to find the words for it, I'll keep looking, but we talk about having sufficient, we didn't use the word metadata, but that's what we meant, having sufficient structure to understand the source and the provenance of the data, which should allow whoever gets it to use it in their workflow however it's appropriate, trust it or not trust it, but make their own decision. So I think we've handled a lot of that in the statement we made about making sure that even data that's not fully structured, fully standardized with full semantic interoperability has at least sufficient data to judge its provenance and decide whether to use it.
I think you're right. Could I speak to bullet two on the top of page 12, failure to enhance sharing of unstructured data? I don't believe that's
true. Where are you?
I'm on the top of page 12. It's one of the six bullets that spread over from the previous one.
Right where your cursor is.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about unstructured data as something with some provenance on, some complex on that, it's all over the place. I mean, every note in the hospital is that kind. And I think someone's talking about something different than just an ability to deliver unstructured data as payload.
Yeah. We should
get to the heart of it. There's some other problem that someone's talking about, but if we are not talking about completely unstructured with nothing anywhere, then it's quite available. V2 is available and Fire is available. It's I don't know about X12, but it's just around. It's if you got it, you can send it as unstructured data. The problem always is getting it and putting that little provenance around it.
Yeah, so it goes back to the earlier comment about sufficient provenance to be able to basically trust the source or know what to do with it when you get it. So perhaps it's really not, we can eliminate this bullet and come back with something more akin to, sufficient provenance to.
And I'd go back to the little value from structured data. I don't think that's true either. I mean, unless it comes in sort of encrypted, if you see a blood pressure with the units and all that, in fact, if it's structured, you can deliver it very easily as a text report. So
I think, though, we did talk about earlier the floor and the ceiling, that depending upon the situation nationally, there could be an issue that needs to be communicated with, and government wants to step in and say, here's the floor for communication, and we're putting this at the floor because we realize the constituents involved are going to be those that aren't necessarily as technically mature as other organizations or don't have the capacity. And in some cases, we'll say that the group that we're trying to address are organizations and stakeholders that are largely have are mature in their technical capability, and therefore we're coming in at a higher level. And I just think we have to make sure that this accommodates the needs of both when the situation allows or demands.
But if you have to accept sort of this upper level structure, there's no problem to take the payload. If you can't do
right.
that, you can't play, really.
Right, but for instance, you might take a consolidated CDA that just has the header function and now is followed with notes. That's perfect. That's great.
Yeah.
Or it might be someone who, exactly, it might be something that generated by a fax that's converted into a consolidated CDA, and that's great, too. I'm just saying that there is going to be a variety of technical capacity, and that the government will choose, or could whoever's doing this choose the floor or the ceiling.
Okay, we've got 11 minutes. I love this discussion. Can we ask that any additional bullets, since these are some of the identified barriers, be sent to us or put into the Google document? We've got 8 more of these to go through, so sorry to cut it off, but are we good with moving on? And everybody send their...
Yeah, but I don't... Are they numbered? I don't see 8 more things. Where are we... What pages are we supposed to get to?
Well, I've got notes here. We will send a follow-up email via Adam and Stacy and Lauren and point people in the right direction on some of these things that we've identified that people want to add a little more comments to.
Okay.
So then the next recommendation is to highlight the interdependencies between the TEFCA and the USCDI. Are there any comments on this, or are we missing anything?
Well, just as the third bullet, how do we know? These are sort of, the RC should promote the voice of the individual and provide that voice. So I don't think that's stated in the terms that can be actuated. I mean, what's really wanted? We want to get a seat, we want to get funding for rent patients, or I just don't know that that's going to be actionable the way it's stated.
So the RCE should have a proportionate number of patients' voices in governance that is equal to other stakeholders' gravitas.
I mean, what the problem is that other stakeholders often have companies that send them to meetings, and the individual parties often don't. But there are usually people that are claim the voice of the patient or patient advocates in a lot of meetings.
Yeah,
so.
And we identified exactly what you just said, Clem, in the earlier recommendations under the data class work groups. So maybe we just revise this bullet a little bit to incorporate what Leslie just said.
Okay.
Okay. Any other comments on this section? Okay, seeing none, we can move on to the next one. And then this is to ensure the voice of the patient is represented and heard. Okay. Am I giving people a chance to read, or can we move on to the next one?
Move on.
You can move on.
Okay, great. Okay, so the next one is to endorse 2 criteria for data class prioritization and advancement, and we've identified value and technical requirements as those two main criteria. With a
I don't know that people could disagree with it, but it's not very actionable.
We can eliminate it. Some of these were just sort of placeholders. I think we've probably covered that. So
are most people, anybody want it kept in, or is this something that we just want to delete?
So this is Laura. I think you can delete it, but I'm wondering if we put anything in later around the idea of piloting. I think this is the type of the stuff that, I mean, how do we know and measure the value, and are the technical requirements doable? I think this is getting at why I was suggesting that we would suggest that we pilot the process. I think it's because the actionable pieces of these things is what we somewhat question.
So why don't we, Laura, when you send us the recommendation for the concerns in the trial, why don't we incorporate this and take some of this language and add it where we see that value and technical requirements are important.
Okay.
And then the next section, the 2.3.5, the establish a biography, it's essentially the provenance of the data class. It's everything we learned about the data class moving it through the UDF-CDI process.
It's not a bad idea, but can we
afford it?
Yeah.
We're giving our recommendations for everything we want.
That's right.
Be greedy.
Yeah, be greedy. Okay.
And remember, this is in our additional as well.
And then on 2.3.6, we talked about the process of harmonization in stage two, and it sort of called out again here. That was such a difficult piece of the S&I work, and it wasn't always successfully done, I must say. I just felt the need to call it out again because it's so critical to the interoperability. But
I think it's worthy, but I think it needs to be spelled out. I'm not for sure what you exactly mean.
Yeah.
Is that trying to find how you represent gender when it's got two or three different code sets?
Yeah, isn't there a value, or is there a value? Maybe that's another testable hypothesis. Is there a value of sort of specifying things like that? So we'll all use the 9 categories of gender, or however many there are now.
Well,
Terry,
it's worthy.
Go ahead, Clem.
It's worthy, but I don't know how you write it such that you know it's being done.
Yeah,
I was just wondering if this is something we add to the overarching recommendations as opposed to these additional, and then tweak it a little bit, because we have addressed it throughout the stages, this importance of kind of being cognizant of the data item harmonization.
Christina, did we get to the harmonization effort that brought up between the government agencies? Cadence of a new... Oh, okay, good, thanks.
Yeah.
So this is Laura. I think it probably does belong more in the appropriate stages, so that harmonization is happening along the way. And that should just be part of the process, not an issue that we put out here.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll drop it into stage, probably stage two, stage three.
Yeah, and it may need to be a little flavor in both. I'd have to look at those as well, but I think it's a constant thing as things are developing and evolving. Yeah,
that's what I was wondering if we move it towards the beginning where we just say some of our larger recommendations in section two, I guess.
Maybe, but I think we need to look at the stages themselves and refer to harmonization as you progress through the stages. It may be in one stage, it may be in a couple.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that as well.
Okay.
Great.
Okay, and under 2.4.1, data class issues, I'm wondering if this doesn't fit under Laura's proposal for testing. So I think the first four, well, first three anyway, might be part of the testing run. And then the last two were our wish list of things that we thought someone should think about, but we weren't going to.
So Terry, this is Lauren. Sorry to jump in, but we should probably go to public comment soon, and then if we have any remaining time, we can come back, if that works.
Of course.
Great. Okay. Operator, can you please open the line for public comment?
If you'd like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Thank you. And while we're waiting for folks to dial in, I'll just do a quick back to the roll call. Did Stephen Lane join? Or Brett Oliver? Valerie Gray?
Hi, Lauren. You've got Val on the line.
Hi, Valerie. Rich Elmore? Eric Heflin? Or Dan Freeman? Operator, do we have any comments in the queue at this time?
There are no comments in the queue at this time.
Okay. Terry, I'll hand it back to you for the last few minutes.
And back to Christina.
So, Leslie, you had mentioned, I'm going to jump down a little bit just in the interest of time, this last part, to harmonize the U.S. CDI efforts with the cadence of likely participants. This is an area that we needed a little more examples.
Okay.
Leslie, we've inserted your example, but if others have other examples that they would like to add, I think there was also the CMS data element library was mentioned, but we realized that this is not an extensive list. So we'll, I guess, add this to the email that we sent out for specific things that we would like feedback on. Sound good to everybody? Or if anybody would like me to capture anything now?
Okay.
Sounds good. And then we have the last one. Last two data class issues, if anyone has any comments on that, or if we want to look at the governance structure, I'll leave it up to the group to decide.
We didn't try to propose a governance structure, but we proposed the suggestion that they have a fairly robust one.
And then this is where we put the crossover to the RCE.
And I think that's fine and sufficient.
Sounds good. With 2 minutes, anywhere else we would like to go in this document? Terry, go ahead.
We had time to spare. My goodness.
How did we do that?
So this has been a spectacular piece of work, guys. I wish we had another 5 months to do it, but there's some advantage to being forced to do things quickly. But thank you. We can't thank you enough for all the time you've spent and all the thought you've given and the expertise you bring to this. It's really, I think this is a document we can be proud of.
Well, thank all of you for all of your hard work there, too.
Yes, I just want to echo Terry's comments. Thank you all for your hard work and time and commitment. I know there's still a pending meeting on the calendar for next week, and I know we still have a couple of items to clean up on the document today based on the conversations, and we'll circle back to the full group if we need to keep that meeting, even if only for a brief time.
Hey, everybody.
Sounds
this is
good. Thank you.
Just want to say thank you for everybody. It's an amazing experience. Looking forward to the next chapter.
You all next week.
Thanks everyone. We're not done yet, though.
Yeah, we'll see you next week. Thanks for all your work, Terry and Christina. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't wait. Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Thank you, everybody. Bye.
Bye. Bye.